Calling home this morning is Jane Postelnik in Devon, who lives on the edge of the famous Dartmoor, which has something of an eerie reputation. And that is from the Dartmoor Symphony by Nigel Shaw. So Dartmoor can be misty and brooding, but also bright and majestic. And here's some majestic. Now that sounds like a place you'd like to go to. Jane Postelnik from Darfield originally now lives in Ashburton, the English version of Ashburton, with his partner Catherine McGee. He's a Kiwi who came here as a small boy with Asian and Swiss ancestry, he tells us. And now he's been a long time gone after leaving Canterbury University and working for a while here as a lawyer. Hello, Jane.
Hello, Jim. Hi.
We've had a lot of fascinating occupations on Calling Home. You're our first lay minister, I think. You encountered the teachings of the Buddha while travelling in Asia in 1989. I don't suppose we can call it an epiphany, but an aha moment sounds a bit frivolous. How would you describe what happened?
Well, you know, it wasn't an aha or an epiphany moment. It was actually a process of suddenly realising that there was a kind of a body of teaching and practice that spoke to the things I was really interested in, and that it actually led me to go traveling. I can't imagine how my life would have been or how it would have turned out if I hadn't had that encounter in Asia.
Were you looking for something like Buddhism?
I had no idea that it might be like Buddhism. And to be honest, when I first encountered it, I didn't even know that it was Buddhism I was encountering in a certain way. It was more like, oh, here's this practice of meditation and these spiritual teachings that seem to go to really the heart of what I'm interested in, which is what it means to live in this world in a way that feels meaningful and that supports well-being and happiness. And so it was kind of, I think it was really lucky for me that it wasn't presented in a way that was overtly Buddhist or religious.
And how did you then become, I know this is cutting the long story short, but how did you then become a lay Buddhist minister and end up where you are?
I went to the UK to a meditation retreat centre in Devon, which is near where I live now, because that's where the teachers I'd met in Asia were connected. And then my teachers asked if I'd train with them to become a teacher. And so it's sort of a lay minister and a Buddhist teacher are sort of, it's the same thing in a way.
And the nub of it all is that it's made you happy. You don't have that kind of questioning hole in your life anymore. Would that be a fair way of putting it?
It's answered some of the deeper and most significant questions for me. Yeah, I don't think it sort of, I don't think any one thing answers all the questions of one's life.
No.
But in terms of just a way to engage with one's own mind and heart to kind of, I don't know, I would say transform the various patterns and habits that seem to lead to struggle and lead to a sense of sometimes dissatisfaction. You know, we don't learn in school how to develop our hearts and our minds that much. We learn how to absorb information and train ourselves for functioning in the world at a certain level. But at another level, I'm not sure we do learn that. Well, I didn't growing up anyway.
No, there's no Hearts and Minds 101 at uni when you get there, is there?
Not so much.
You're a member of the Gaia House Teacher Council. You've been teaching insight, meditation and Buddhist practice internationally for 30 years now. So, Jane, what does an average day look like for you doing that?
So a lot of the times when I'm teaching, I'm actually teaching in a residential retreat situation. And the day would involve being with a group of people that might be from 20 to, you know, 120, where the group will be in silence most of the time and they'll be engaging in meditation and different forms of sitting, walking, standing meditation. And I'll be giving guidance in terms of instructions for meditation, talking about the kind of the principles and the understandings that underpin that kind of journey, we could say, and accompanying the people who are exploring it.
Do you get many Kiwis coming to do these retreats?
We do, actually. It's a regular delight, actually, to encounter Kiwis there are now more opportunities to do retreats all around the world, particularly in the Western world. In the last 30 years, that's changed. When I first was practicing, there weren't many places, and people really did come from all over Europe and all over the world, in fact, to Devon, just as I did. And that can be quite a reclusive activity from one perspective. And yet that's, for me, very much embedded in a vision of how does one contribute to the well-being of the world. It also involves a sense of what the well-being of the collective, of life, of society, of community and ecology might ask of me or ask of anyone.
So a long time ago, you went to Darfield High School and Canterbury University. Then you put on the wig and gown for a while. You had a brief career as a barrister and solicitor of the High Court before you left here. So I imagine the law was stimulating and a challenge, but there was always a missing piece in the jigsaw of life that you were putting together. You knew that you wanted something else.
I really felt there was something important that I might have been able to do in the legal profession. And it was always about really wanting to contribute and to help in some way. I actually didn't want to be in the sort of the ongoing conflict situation that the legal professional operates within, which is where you're representing one interest against another almost all the time. And so I have a lot of appreciation for those people who have stayed with and carried that kind of that role of wishing to serve individuals and the community through a legal practice. But for myself, there was something else that I was looking for, and I didn't really know what it was. I just knew that I needed to go out and see what else was out there in the world at that time.
Yeah, understood. Catherine is Buddhist too?
Yes, we actually met at Gaia House, the retreat centre, so we got to know each other while we were both living and working there, and she is also a meditation teacher, or a teacher of Buddhism and spirituality.
So let's talk about where you are. Ashburton. Ashburton, who knew, is a lively historic town nestled on the southern side of the Dartmoor National Park, which is described as one of the last great wildernesses in the UK. What does that do for your serenity where you live?
Well, you know, I'm really grateful to be living near Dartmoor. There's a sense of openness, of wildness, of getting away from the relatively densely populated nature of, you know, even the southwest of England compared to most of NZ. It's quite densely populated. There's another village turns up every 2 or 3 miles when you're driving down the road. And yet here it's more spacious and more open. And I think I would be much less happy if I didn't have access to wilderness. You know, for me, it's the thing I most love to do, is to go and be out on the moor and the rivers and the open spaces. Very nourishing indeed.
Janne Postelnik is calling home from Devon. So Steven Spielberg filmed War Horse on Dartmoor. He said he had never been gifted with such an abundance of natural beauty, which is quite the endorsement. So if we went rambling, what would we find?
Well, what you'd find is, first of all, it's a national park. And for a Kiwi, it's a bit surprising because actually it's all farmed. And it's in a strange, I mean, it's open space, but it was surprising to me initially to go and sort of put a tent up on the moor and then have a tractor drive past in the morning, which is what actually happened the first time I came. It took me a little while to actually get to love it. It's been very profoundly affected by human activity. It was a forest several hundred of, or maybe hundreds of years ago, and there's very little forest left. Out on the open moor, you can actually get lost. Even though it's not that big and you're never that far from a road, but sometimes the mist comes rolling in and the world just sort of becomes all very blurry. But things that stand out to me are the tors, the amazing sort of granite outcroppings that you find all over Dartmoor, and also the ancient stone circles and standing stones.
There's the Tolman Stone I saw, which is... it looks a bit like a big donut. It's an ancient stone with a hole in it. Now, you'd know about this. You're in the healing business. It's thought to have healing properties, the Tolman Stone.
Yes. Well, I've been through it many times, and I actually take groups walking on Dartmoor in the context of a walking retreat. I don't know if anyone's reported having a profound healing experience with going through the stone, but there is something about it's a little tricky. And if you're not an experienced sort of wilderness person, and lots of the folk who come on my retreats aren't, you know, it's a little bit tricky to actually get your body to go through there. And but I think it's also just lovely to imagine what it is for a river to bore a hole through a boulder.
So 1,000 square kilometres in Dartmoor, you know, we have trouble getting our heads around the concept of, you know, farms dotted through national parks. But I looked at some of the images, the tours and the amazing stone bridges. I saw a very cute railway operating. It's green. It's not all rocks and tors. I saw bush tracks that could have been New Zealand, and a river that could have been the Avon flowing through Christchurch, and there are otters and ponies. But as you say, the mist can close in. It did inspire The Hound of the Baskervilles, didn't it? The Sherlock Holmes story.
It did indeed, and I live very close to Hound Tor, which is it was named after the sort of the ancient hounds and that whole legend. And there's actually in the village next to, or the small town next to Ashburton, Buckfastleigh, there's a church, a burnt out church on a hill, and in the graveyard there's the place where the sort of the character who the story was based on, who was, you know, the sort of the scary character. I don't remember the detail of the story now. So that kind of literary history is woven into and quite a beautiful part of what you kind of feel on Dartmoor. That sense of, again, it sort of connects with the human history of this area.
And it's such an interesting place because you've got the Devon coastline within fairly easy reach of where you are. So you live in pretty well the most optimal outdoors area of the UK, don't you?
Well, I think one of the most optimal, definitely, and absolutely the Devon coast path is absolutely gorgeous. But what I really miss and what's hard for me is that it's all relatively green and pleasant, which is lovely, but there's a certain quality of what I get from mountains that just isn't here.
Yeah,
and you can find real mountains in the north of Wales and up in Scotland, but that's a long way from here. And there's a part of me that still really at times pines for the mountains and that sense of more sort of untouched wildness that New Zealand is so wonderfully endowed with, really.
Yeah, nicely put. How often do you normally come back to New Zealand?
Well, I've tried to get back every, you know, approximately 3 years for quite a while now. It feels like I'm balancing a question about how much it's okay for me to fly personally in the light of the impact of fossil fuel usage in our world. And at the same time, my father, my brother, my half-sister are still there, and I really feel the distance. It's really hard. I feel quite conflicted these days about getting in a plane, and I do it when I feel like I really have to, not just because I would like to, or else I'd probably come a lot more now.
Well, it's a good thing you live in such a nice place, isn't it, from that point of view. I imagine it's not all children's book landscapes and Devonshire cream teas, though. There must be drawbacks to being where you are, even though it's a lovely part of Britain.
The big drawback is being 10,000 or whatever it is miles from New Zealand. I can't really blame that on Devon.
No, you can't. Well, in Devon, you've got the cream teas, which I've reminded myself of, because they're a British institution, aren't they? What's the difference? I hate to ask you a frivolous question, because we've been talking about slightly more elevated aspects of your life, but what's the difference between a Devon cream tea and a Cornish cream tea? Do you know?
Yeah, I do actually. Yeah, and it's interesting. I'm going to be found to be in the wrong county on this one, but I believe it is that in Cornwall they put the jam on first and follow it with the clotted cream onto the scone, whereas in Devon they put the cream on first and add the jam on top. and it's a thing of some contention, I believe, but I have always felt quite clearly that I prefer it, and I've tried it both ways. I prefer it with the jam on the bottom and the cream on top.
It's like a Dr. Seuss book, isn't it? I think I'd prefer it your way.
The butter battle book you're thinking of, I imagine.
I think that's right.
Well, the thing for me is you can get more cream on that. You get this clotted cream. It's not whipped as such. It's just thick, super thick. And you can get more on when you put it on top, is my view. So it's purely practical greediness.
You tell us you're also a fan of the local cheese, onion and potato pasty. So is that a Cornish pasty? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, it is a Cornish pasty, but a traditional Cornish pasty is made with meat, with mince usually, mince and potato and onion probably, and maybe some other things. But I'm vegetarian. I've been vegetarian for many decades now. And so I don't eat the traditional Cornish pasty, but I like the cheese and onion one because it's tasty. And it's also, to be honest, it's probably a bit of a thing, a bit like getting a good New Zealand pie. You can get pies in a supermarket, but in terms of something you buy hot on this in a shop that you can eat while you're out and about, it's the closest thing to getting a pie is getting a pasty.
So you and Catherine, presumably both vegetarian, you live in your own house away from the centre, don't you?
Yeah, we're sort of on the edge of town. I mean, Ashburton is it's a small town. I think it's probably, 3,000 or 4,000 population. And we're just on the northern edge as the, we're in Dartmoor as such. And so, you have whole towns inside a national park. Again, that's a whole different thing. But the park came a lot later than the towns, obviously, in terms of the designation. And we're just as the road starts to climb up onto the elevated section of the moor. So it's really just out in my backyard and, 5 minutes on the bike and I'm up in the open space, which is amazing.
Oh, it does sound lovely. Now, you've touched on the activism in your life, and I'm told you were always a bit of an activist even when you were in Aotearoa. So what do you feel, you've mentioned the climate, what do you feel strongly enough about Yanai to get involved in?
Yeah, I've been involved the last 3-4 years now, taken that concern and engagement to another level. I've been involved with Extinction Rebellion, which you may well have heard about. Radio New Zealand tried to call me, and my phone had been lost at that point about 3 years ago after I was arrested several times in the big rebellion actions where we occupied Waterloo Bridge and other parts. But I was on Waterloo Bridge in London in 2019, and since then the... Yeah, I was sort of surprised, but not surprised to find myself willing to place myself in a position where I'm subject to arrest and prosecution for non-violent, action, for just staying where I've chosen to be, to protest and to try and bring both public awareness but also generate political will for the changes that are needed.
So you've surprised yourself. There's been a fair degree of ire directed, hasn't there, towards the activities of Extinction Rebellion. So have you felt that as well? You've felt the anger?
At sometimes I have, yeah. There's individuals who are, understandably upset and angry at sort of the ways in which their activity may have been affected or their ability to go from one place to another might have been limited. And that's a difficult thing. And yet, there's a way in which when your house is on fire, sometimes you have to break some doors down. The scientists are pretty clearly saying, hey, we're out of time.
Does this put you at odds with anybody else in Gaia House, or would you have support from inside the house for doing that?
Well, interestingly, I've had support from Gaia House. They've, published some pieces which I've written about it. And obviously, I'm not telling anyone else what they should do. I'm just saying what I do. I haven't received any. In fact, rather than getting pushback from Gaia House or other sort of centres and groups around the world, I've actually had a lot of appreciation and support.
So not just a quiet life on the edge of the Great Moor, but an active life, an interesting sounding life. Can you ever see yourself, I know Catherine's from the UK originally, isn't she? So can you ever see yourself living back here, or are those ties to Devon too strong now?
Well, I don't think my tie is as strong as it would stop me, but I'm not sure that Catherine would want to come and live permanently in New Zealand. I mean, she's been several times. In fact, she'd been there before we met, and she likes it. We've sometimes talked and thought we could spend an extended period back there, but I think if I'm honest with myself, it's really unlikely that Catherine would ever want to live there. And so there's this funny thing for me of, like, I've been away for as long as I lived there now, and sort of... Catherine actually asked me, she said, when I said I'm doing calling home this evening, and she said, so does it feel like that to you? And it's you know, the question for me was, well, sort of and sort of not. You know, like I hear your voice and it's like, yeah, I'm talking to a Kiwi. I get excited whenever I meet one. Wherever it is, it's always, oh, Kiwi. And part of me isn't quite sure anymore if I recognize the accent or I can tell if it's an Australian or a Kiwi accent. You know, it's like there's a way in which when I think of New Zealand, it's where I'm from, but I'm not quite sure if my home is there. New Zealand is always going to be sort of my home. And yeah, I don't know if I'll ever really live there permanently again.
Maybe when the great wheel of samsara turns, maybe in another life. You know.
Well, it could be. I'm definitely not going to say never with regard to NZ.
Very nice to talk to you and to hear about where you live. Thank you for calling home. Really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed the conversation. And yeah, it's really, really nice to feel that sense of contact with NZ, and appreciate you inviting me to have the conversation.
Janai Postelnik from the edge of Dartmoor in Ashburton in the UK.